Spitfire Girl, written by Lily Baxter, read by Penelope Freeman. The moral right of the author has been asserted. Chapter 1. Primrose Hill, London, December 1940. It was midnight, but the sky over London was alight with fire and flame. Susan stood on Primrose Hill, watching in horror as the bombs fell from the sky and showers of shrapnel cascaded down like fireworks on bonfire night. Audible even at this distance, the roar of the German aircraft engines and the ear-splintering explosions were enough to terrify the bravest soul, let alone the small creature shivering at her feet.
"It's all right, Charlie," she said, bending down to scoop him up.
She cuddled him in her arms, rubbing her cheek against his soft fur and inhaling the warm puppy smell as if it were the most expensive French perfume. Charlie made soft grunting noises as he snuggled up beneath her chin, raising his head in an attempt to lick her face. She could feel him trembling even now, and she turned resolutely in the direction of home.
"Let's get you back into the warmth, little chap. But I want you to be a very good boy and keep absolutely quiet."
She retraced her steps along Ellsworthy Terrace, turning right into Ellsworthy Road. In the red reflected glow of the fiery sky, the Edwardian terraced houses bore an air of shabby gentility, not least the one where Susan lived and worked. She climbed the front steps and let herself in, making as little noise as possible. She would never normally have been wandering around this late at night, especially in an air raid. But Charlie was not yet fully house-trained, and his needs were more pressing at this moment than her own safety. How long she could keep his presence a secret from Mrs. Kemp and her daughters was not something she dared think about. London might be falling about their ears, but for the first time in her 18 years, she had something that belonged to her, and her alone. She tucked the Labrador puppy under her jacket and headed for the back stairs which led to the lower ground floor. Feeling her way in the darkness, Susan's fingers touched the cold glass of one of the framed watercolours that lined the narrow hallway. She was glad that she could not see the enigmatic faces of the Japanese warriors who glared stonily into space. Stepping carefully, she negotiated her way around the mahogany half-moon table, where a rather angry-looking Buddha sat cross-legged next to the old-fashioned candlestick telephone, which was just another relic from their past that the family refused to give up. The late Graham Kemp had been a minor official in the British Embassy in Tokyo, although to hear Mrs. Kemp speaking about him, anyone would think that he had held a far superior position. Their glory days, living the lives of expats, might be long gone, but the family continued to believe that they were in all ways a cut above the rest. Jane Kemp, as Susan had found out to her cost, was a snob and a bigot. Her daughters were not much better. They made it perfectly clear that a girl such as herself, an orphan raised in a children's home, was less than nobody. She was a servant, and as such should be invisible. She was paid a weekly wage that barely kept her in stockings and shampoo, but she was supposed to be grateful for her bed and board and the 2 uniforms she was compelled to wear when on duty. As she only had 1 half-day off a week, this meant that she was almost constantly garbed in one or other of the unflattering outfits provided by her employer. Susan loathed the brown cotton dress and beige apron and cap which she wore in the mornings. For afternoon wear, she had a black number with a frilled white apron and headband, which was a little better. Neither of the garments could be classified as being in the height of fashion, and the accompanying black lace-up shoes were both ugly and uncomfortable. Cuddling Charlie, she made her way carefully downstairs to the large, old-fashioned kitchen, which could not have changed very much since the house was built shortly after the turn of the century. A deal table stood in the centre of the room, and the original cast-iron range still held pride of place, although Mrs. Kemp had recently, and somewhat unwillingly, invested in a more modern gas cooker. It was second-hand, but Susan much preferred cooking on instant and controllable heat. The range was large, temperamental, and guzzled wood and coal like a hungry giant. It needed constant feeding and cleaning, and once a week she had to apply a coating of black lead to the cast iron in order to prevent it from rusting. It was a dirty
Sample complete. Ready to continue?